It's time for Twig this week at Google. Stacy's here, Jeff's here. We're going to gather and talk about the latest news. Google results are in, Facebook results are in. We'll contrast that as to Microsoft and Apple's results. And we'll talk about lots of cool new things, including a very scary robot and a very cute one. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 390, recorded Wednesday, February 1st, 2017. Bacon shortage. This Week in Google is brought to you by Curry, a real-life robot with a great personality. Curry is available for pre-order now at heycurry.com. That's HEYKURI.com. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, the show where we cover whatever the hell we want, but We will attempt today to cover Google, Facebook, Twitter, and the maddening crowd. With us, the king of the maddening crowd, Mr. Jeff, I resist Jarvis.
Well, my crown.
Hey, great to see you at home and everything.
Yeah.
You recovered from Davos?
Yeah, I did. And then I didn't go to Tokyo, so I'm probably kind of recovered. And then I'm in town for a few weeks. I don't know what to do. My wife's going to commit harikari.
Yeah. You're going to be bored in the real world.
Yeah.
Also with us from Austin, Texas, Stacy Higginbotham of IoTpodcast.com. Stacy on IoT.com. You know, I was thinking about you, Stacy, because I'm seeing more and more articles about ransomware and how it's getting more aggressive targeting operating systems. And I'm thinking targeting soon IoT devices.
That is one of my big trends of 2017. See? Is ransomware.
See?
Yes. There was the hotel issue.
In Austria,
yeah. Yes.
Which I misreported because I read somebody's news report that said people were locked into their rooms as well as locked out by ransomware. Only locked out.
Only locked out.
Nobody was...
Well, actually... It wasn't, they weren't locked out or locked in.
The keys didn't work.
They just couldn't issue keys.
Right. And existing keys would continue to work or not?
I believe that's true. The Verge actually did a good job.
There was a lot of fake news around that. Although I hate to use that phrase, but.
It's not. I mean, it was just
there was errors. There were error reporting errors. But. I loved the statement from the manager of the hotel. Apparently, this hotel in Austria, which is over 100 years old, has been hacked multiple times in the last few months. And he finally said, "That's it. I give up. We're getting mechanical keys for the door locks. Back to the key with a big tassel." And that's one of the things I like about the old European hotels. And as you leave it with the clerk. And when you get back, you say, "I'm in room 304-18." And they give you the key with a tassel and you go upstairs. I like that. And you can't get locked out by ransomware. But this is an example of as we increasingly use digital technology in our lives, that opens the door to malefactors.
Yes, but those keys, you could also get copies of them made easily. You could see if someone's in their room or not. I mean, there's, I don't know how many times that, you know,
do it from Lithuania.
So, in the interesting thing to me was, I felt like their ransom was relatively low.
And so they're smart. Of course, it is.
Right, 2 bitcoins, so like $1,800.
Oh, is that all? Just 2 bitcoins?
I think half a bitcoin. Was
what?
It half a bitcoin?
$500.
How much is Bitcoin going right now?
It's about $938.22.
Okay, 2 bitcoins. And basically, I can see this sort of thing happening all over town. Like when you think about like someone hacking into like some Nest credentials, for example, You want to turn your thermostat on? Quick, pay this.
Yeah. So and the key is you make fun. It low enough that people go, well, it's easier to pay them than it is to try to fix this. So you make it up in volume, Jeff.
Like they say in the Shimada district.
Yeah.
Micropayments for ransom.
Yeah. It's depressing, isn't it?
You throw out the thermostat. You go to a different company. You get a download. I'm trying to think of a scenario where it really, where is the payment? Where have they got you by the
short hairs,
tender parts?
Well, your car doesn't start because you pay the ransomware.
Right. And our Teslas are probably, sitting they're ducks for that, right?
Yeah.
It's talk about drive by wire. I mean, we it's all computer systems.
So the
question is, I'm not going to give up my Tesla, but I might give up my Nest. The question is, has IoT become useful enough that it's worth it to brave the risks? And is it a big enough market that manufacturers will secure it better?
I think we're getting to the point right now where manufacturers are securing things.
Good.
So we've almost stopped. Probably in 2015 is when people really woke up to the fact that, like, if you want to build a connected product, you shouldn't go to a contract manufacturer and have them do the software for your product.
Right.
So the problem is those devices were still coming out in 2016. So now so the devices that are actually going to be secured all the way are going to be coming out like later this year, unless you're a really particularly good company. And there are those companies. And for the devices that are out there that are not secure, there's a lot of Wemo has a lot of issues. Samsung has some issues with their products.
And these are big companies. These are not.
Yeah, these are companies that basically made the call to not prioritize security because customers wouldn't pay for it. It didn't make economic sense. Now it makes economic sense. They're investing in it. And so you've got to look for companies that are actually willing to patch things. So, yay. Yeah.
And some companies are. And, our sponsor Ring, for instance, very famously, there was a security flaw in a Ring. And as soon as they were notified about it, they pushed, and I didn't even know they could do it, they pushed a firmware update down to the doorbell before it went public. And that's what you're looking for, a company that has that capability, firmware that gets regularly updated, and a company that considers owning the software as important as owning the hardware.
Mm-hmm. So that's where I think things are going to go. Good. The other thing to think about, though, is these companies cannot, it sounds so obvious, but you can't rest on your laurels. You've got to always be testing and being aware and updating your product. And that's going to suck because not everybody has a business model.
That's kind of what I mean.
You is have that to something own you software. Can outsource?
The software is your product as much as the doorbell or the thermostat. The software is part of it.
Is there a company that now offers that as a service?
There's White Hat. There's companies that do like pen testing and White Hat hackers that you can hire to test your product. Now, there's not a company necessarily that I can call to make sure all my devices are secure.
Oh, I see. Right. So that's interesting, Stacey. So there's two ways to it. I was thinking it's kind of a software as a service, security as a service from the manufacturer.
Well, there's plenty
side.
Of companies that do that.
Yeah, there's Absolutely. Companies there, that
there
do
are.
That. But
so
it's
they,
not
they
like,
offer that. You can outsource that.
Yeah, for years. Well, I mean, websites, there have been companies that do that for websites. That's a big business is these companies that will.
So IoT as well. Okay. Yeah. So that's interesting, Stacey. So is there a UL Laboratories of Security?
That's what
UL
we need.
UL has a security standard. That a cyber kind of security standard that they're
Stacey
working
would
on.
Know.
There's also, I'm going to punt on the acronym for a minute. Let me look and see what there are several groups and Verizon has one that's pretty exciting. So let me find it out. It's the IoT security certification from ICSA Labs, which is a third party testing and cert.
ICSA has been doing this for other
So theirs actually, they have a cert for IoT security. And apparently, this is kind of funny because I know the CEO of Canary, the CTO of Canary, and they actually got this designation a couple months ago. And they were the first company that actually made it through the first time. And up until then, the ICSA was like, maybe our standards are unrealistic.
Wow.
But it was just that all these companies hadn't been controlling their
They'd
whole
process.
They'd
never done it before.
Thought about it. Yeah.
This is ICSA would be, I would be very, they're kind of the underwriter's lab for digital stuff. Mm-hmm. And that would be really great. They do have this ICSA Internet of Things security testing framework. This is exactly what you need. And as consumers, what we need to do is we need to look for things that are UL certified or ICSA certified. That would be nice to have that.
So there's that, but there's also things for consumers, and this is why I'm wondering if there is a service opportunity in the market, because you know, there are still consumers who are using crappy passwords, who don't change their password on their router, who use stupid SSIDs,
that's which probably are all, the majority, right?
Probably, I would guess. I don't like to think that about
we've
my
been,
fellow
we've
people.
We've been beating the drum for years, and certainly that's one of the things I do on the radio show where I'm talking to real people, I mean, constantly. But I think that that's still a minority of the overall user base.
Yeah, so that's another issue. And then finally, there is, on the consumer side, password reuse is actually a big issue because so many other companies are really crappy. Like every time I implement a password with someone, I'm like, I mean, it's like my doctor's office, all these patient portals. I have to have a password to get to my vet's records. I mean, these guys are not taking good care of my credentials. I know this. But, you know, it's hard for a consumer. So I can see that being another weak point.
You want to be depressed?
No.
The most popular passwords of 2016.
Yes, we talked about them.
Popular passwords. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, we did, didn't we? Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. QWERTY. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. And on and on and on. So it's not getting any better. Oh, that's right. We did talk about, this was the keeper security list that we talked about last week.
Yeah. And we discovered one of the most common passwords is a bot password.
Yep.
Yeah. Or a hard coded password rather.
This just in, as we go to press about an hour ago, Facebook lost its Oculus lawsuit.
Ooh.
A judgment of $500 million.
Ooh,
to
ouch.
ZeniMax. ZeniMax, of course, is the company that owned id Software. And id CTO John Carmack went to Oculus, and the contention is brought with him information. ZeniMax claimed Palmer Luckey violated an NDA in order to build early prototypes of its Oculus Rift headset. Of course,
so is this Palmer Luckey's fault?
Well, it's an East Texas jury.
It is not an East Texas jury.
Oh, right, it's a Texas jury.
The case was in Dallas.
All right, it's a mid-Texas jury.
I'm like, this is actually not the court that is so lenient.
It's not Tyler, Texas? Okay. All right.
Sorry.
Sheryl Sandberg told Recode, it's not material to Facebook's business. We're disappointed in certain elements of the decision, and we're considering our options to appeal. Facebook spokesperson said the heart of this case was about whether Oculus stole ZeniMax trade secrets, and the jury found decisively in our favor. What? We're obviously disappointed by a few other aspects of today's verdict, but we're undeterred. Well, you know how these things are. There's probably several counts or several points.
Oculus $500 million is what matters.
So, it's all the Oculus people. So Oculus is paying out $200 million. Palmer Luckey and Brendan Iribe, former CEO of Oculus. They have to pay.
Whoa. And how much do they make on the sale?
Well, they can afford it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So I guess the idea is
Palmer Oculus $200 million. For breaking the NDA, $50 million for copyright infringement. Oculus and Luckey each have to pay $50 million for false designation. Iribe has to pay $150 million for the same. Yikes! Oculus says we will appeal.
Right. So, this is a U.S. District Court in the North District of Texas.
Oh, okay. All right.
So.
All right. So this is a somewhat respectable court.
somewhat respectable. And, you know, Facebook did release its earnings today. And let's see.
That's the next news.
I was going to say, made enough money to pay this judgment.
Stock went up 3% today. So what does that amount to?
Yeah. Ad revenue's up 53%. That's a decent result.
Good Lord. It certainly is. They've got like, okay, yes. Yeah, so what were their earnings for the year?
Here, I have the Forbes article in 3, 2.
Never go to Forbes.
Oh, we're talking about that big banner Forbes puts up that says you can go to the article in 3, 2, 1. Revenue rose 51% in the fourth quarter year over year. All right. Wouldn't you like this? Revenue went from $5.84 billion to $8.81 billion in the same period a year earlier. That's considerably more than the consensus among analysts. A record for Facebook, its seventh straight quarterly revenue beat, buoyed by mobile video ad sales, including those on Instagram. Mobile ad revenue, get ready for this, 84% of total ad sales.
Oh, and how many years ago were we telling that Facebook was a mobile loser?
Yeah. Yep. Well, what we did say is, and this was when Facebook went public, they've got to figure out mobile ad revenue if they're going to go forward. Well, they did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they did.
I was curious, because so they had $27.6 billion in total revenue in 2016, which makes a $500 million lawsuit. Nothing. Actually still material.
Okay, a billion is something.
I mean, that's what I was like. I was like, they're saying that's not material?
No, no, it's 1/7 of their total profit this quarter. Oh, I mean.
Revenue.
No, no, I'm talking profit. Profit was $3.57 billion.
So
it's 1/7 of their total profit. Well, you don't care what the revenue is. How much did we make?
Right.
I know that from my business. Well, we had fabulous revenue. Yeah, but how much did I make? Well, we had a lot of expenses.
You spent it all on gadgets.
you bought a few too many computers, Leo. In fact, excluding certain expenses, Facebook said it would have earned $4.15 billion. They didn't mention what those other things are. Company warned when it reported third quarter earnings last time that expenses in 2017 will increase meaningfully.
Right.
We talked about that. And that ad load, the volume of the ads the company can show users, is less of a significant revenue growth factor this year. So a strong quarter topping a strong year, said Sheryl Sandberg in her analyst call. Businesses are making shifts to mobile, and they're doing it on Facebook and Instagram. Actually, did you see that Snapchat's lost a significant number of viewers to Instagram's stories?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a little fun thing to think about. We are moving to a voice first is kind of the key thing. So remember how we were all like mobile first and freaking out?
Yeah.
So now as we get to IoT, voice first, and I don't think it's going to be the sole way people access things, but how do you generate revenue when people know what they want and just ask directly for it without mediating screens?
But, well, if you're Amazon,
right?
Good.
Right.
If you're Google, good.
No, if you're Google Facebook, actually is, Google's in trouble. Like Google doesn't have a great business model yet for selling ads or selling anything.
Because there's no ad in that search result. You're right. You're using Google search.
Well, there's also no media brand there.
Yeah.
Right. So this is if you want people to start thinking ahead, this is where I'm thinking ahead, because I'm like looking at everybody's business model saying, oh my gosh, how are they going to play in this world first? But two, how do you make money when you take away screens? And you shouldn't think about it as taking away screens when screens become not necessarily the primary interaction with computing.
Well, once again, just purely by luck, I chose the right model for our podcasts, because they work great in audio.
Win
for me.
Oh, true. But, win for me, too.
Yeah, yay. And for all of us, because, we're podcasters first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a journalist first and foremost.
Oh, yeah, that.
No. So I did an interview today for Yahoo, for a Katie Couric thing they're doing on podcasts. Uh-huh. I made a point of plugging.
Thank you.
But and saying, podcasts have been around for a long time, been very successful.
I've been profitable since day one. We never had ran a loss. We always made money.
Never.
Mostly because we couldn't not make.
Yeah, because you had no capital.
I can only spend what I made. So.
Yeah. I've been in business a year now, you guys, by the way. I should say that. Hey.
I was so excited I knocked my microphone over. Oh, congratulations. Wow,
that was exciting.
Is it exactly a year? When's the anniversary?
So the 27th of January is when I quit Fortune to start my own gig. And so now it's been a year and almost a week.
It's a year?
I know.
That's
it's exciting.
So right. Congratulations.
Way exciting. How long have you been on the show now?
May, maybe?
It'll be a year soon. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Congrats, Stacey. That makes me so happy.
That's so
that's a scary thing to do. Mm-hmm. Right?
It was. Yes. No, it was super scary. It's still super scary. But I'm really excited. And so, and thank you. I should say a big thank you. This, I'm going to get all mushy. Thank you, you guys.
Well, we love you. And we're just, you know what? I love seeing brand individuals able to take off with their own brand. I just love it when that happens. And most of the people we work with have done that, you know? They have their own brand. Personal brand.
I still feel weird saying those words.
I do,
yes.
Too. It's a creepy thing. Mm-hmm. I know. I agree with you. I don't like it either. It's creepy. But here's the non-creepy side of it. You own your destiny.
True.
So so it doesn't have to be, the brand doesn't have to be Leo, Leo, Leo. It has to, you know, the brand could be, give you value, you know, help people, you know, whatever, inform people, entertain people. But the real point is that you control your destiny. To me, that was, yep. That was what it was all about. And I'm sure for you too. I mean, you were in the similar situation where GigaOM just disappeared one day.
Yes.
Whoosh. And everything you'd done for that brand was taken away.
Yes.
Well, same thing happened to me with Tech TV, right? Same thing happened with Jeff for Entertainment Weekly.
Well, I've just
Entertainment Weekly. I was like, no, Entertainment Weekly's still around.
No, but the Addison Herald Register, Chicago Today, the paper that headed on tomorrow, the San Francisco Examiner, I've killed lots of places.
Yeah, yeah. The Examiner's lots still around, but it's like a tabloid giveaway now. It's not a newspaper. Facebook's monthly active users. Oh, I always like this number. This isn't a number that has anything to do with profit. Well, I guess maybe it does. 1.86 billion monthly active users. That's a 17% year-over-year growth. Daily active users. Remember when we made a big deal that they had a billion users?
Oh, huge deal.
Daily active users, 1.23 billion daily.
Yeah.
That's like a seventh of the world's population.
Every day.
Ridiculous.
I need a better color if I'm going to highlight this. Let's make this bright red and super bold.
You just need a bigger pen. There you go.
Yo, it's toys. Yo, now I learn it. Now I know. Educational aid.
User activity on Facebook's suite of apps. I can hardly read. Wait a minute, let me erase this. User activity on Facebook's suite of apps continues to grow. Facebook-owned messaging apps, WhatsApp and Messenger, both. More than a billion monthly active users each. Instagram has not grown that much, though, right? 600 million was what they had last year, I thought. That's Instagram.
Well, they're in a race against Snapchat.
Right. If they can just hold their own, that's good, right?
I think they want younger people, right? Do they care?
Well, everybody wants younger people.
Yeah, they don't want us. Speaking for Leo and me.
Yeah.
Everybody. They don't want me either. I'm Gen X. I mean, nobody wants Gen X.
Oh, I think Gen X is better than millennials.
No, no. Everyone loves the millennials.
Oh, I know. Mm-hmm. I know.
Because they're so fabulous.
So Jeff and I were baby boomers. We used to be like that.
Oh, you guys are ruining the planet.
All our fault.
We used to be the ones everybody wanted. Used to be all about us.
No one ever wanted me in Gen X. We're just...
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just sandwiched in there.
Yeah, you're the dazed and confused generation.
Okay.
All right, enough of Facebook. How about Alphabet?
Alphabet.
Google reported mixed earnings for its fourth quarter. Alphabet's other... let's see. Alphabet's...
Larry's looking mature now.
Yeah. Larry's thinking, where's Sergey? Where'd he go? What, is he at the airport again? What's going on? That is definitely a far distance stare. Like he's thinking about something. He's puzzling.
Always is.
I wonder how my island's doing and when I can go.
Yeah, exactly. Please, Larry, build the island.
To the island.
We're moving. I'm buying the condo on the island right now.
Wouldn't that be interesting? Isn't that what Peter Thiel was?
They want a seastead.
I wouldn't live in Thiel Land, but I'd live in Larry Land.
Larry Land?
Is it different? Like 100 years from now, it'll be like Water World and we'll all just be in different floating continents?
Well, seriously, if Larry built
a
floating country, I would move in a flash.
I'd move.
If Peter built a floating country?
No.
No.
Wouldn't move.
Who else would you accept as your technology dictator?
Not Zuckerberg. Bill Gross.
Bill Gross is magnificent. Bill Gross is the best. My roommate in Davos, Bill was the best.
I know. That's why I threw him. I would, you know what, Paul Graham.
Really?
I think Paul's very smart. And I know Thiel is also, you know, Y Combinator board and all that. But I really think Paul Graham is pretty sharp.
I think Reid Hoffman.
He's a thoughtful fellow.
Very smart. Founder of LinkedIn.
Well, how about Andreessen? Would you live in Andreessen land?
Andreessen's a bullet-shaped nutball. I do like.
That wasn't very nice of you, Leo.
Oh, you said bad things about me too. I do like.
Really?
I do like Reed Hastings of Netflix.
No, he'd be fun. Yeah,
I'd play his island. The entertainment, we could chill the whole time.
How about Bezosville? Bezosistan.
It would be Bezosistan. So the question is: are you willing to give up a lot of personal freedom to be a winner?
No.
Sounded like the president.
Winning is overrated in that context.
We're sick of winning, right? Aren't we tired of winning? He said we'd be tired of winning. I'm tired of winning.
No, I want to win.
I don't think I've ever been on the winning side. I'm like, wait a second. When did that last happen?
You come from that generation where everybody's a winner. You all get participation trophies.
I never got a participation trophy. Also, my mom let me fail on a regular basis so I would learn something.
Oh.
It was cruel.
Right,
sounds mean. It does. It sounds like you got a little something, anger.
Something brewing there.
Want to let that out? Yeah.
Would you live in Muskopia?
Who's that?
You know,
Elon Muskopia.
Elon.
Yes.
Elon Muskopia.
Where we'd all drive in tunnels under the ground.
I don't know. I'm not so sure.
It'd be good for the planet overall.
Unless it's on
Mars. If it's on Mars, I don't want
to
live there.
Well, but it might be on Mars. You might have to get
that. That's
Bill Gates?
Iffy. Yeah. He's trying really hard.
Yeah, he's proven to be.
So this raises the topic I think we've talked about before, which this lack of empathy issue. Many of these guys are very smart. And
Padmasri Warrior. I would live on her island.
Who's that?
She was the former CIO of Cisco. No, CTO of Cisco, and now she's the CEO at some electric car company. Okay. I'm bringing out a woman because honestly,
that's good. Necessary.
Yes. I'd rather live on an island that's governed by a woman.
I think it's time to give matriarchy a try.
Sheryl Sandberg?
Because patriarchy not working out so good.
You know, Sheryl has some empathy.
No, not going to do it. No, not going to live
I think the whole country would lean, but I think it'd be a nice place.
We'd all be leaning in.
The whole thing would be leaning in, but I think it'd be, I think she's got a heart.
She has a heart and she's willing to, the nice thing about, you know, a lot of female leaders is they're willing to say, oh, you know what? She acknowledges the flaws and lean in now. And she's willing to let her life experiences shape her in a way that not everybody lets their life experiences shape them.
I think
she would be an empathetic leader.
Yeah. But empathy is that, you know, so that was what I was going to say is that some of these guys are analytic and very smart. Now, everyone we've mentioned is very smart, very analytic, very talented. The trains would run on time, let's say, but perhaps
not in Elonville.
In Elonville, the trains would be persistently late.
Oh, yes.
Because he's always late for his
He's late for everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so am I. So that's why I like him. That's what I want. I want somewhere where you, mañana. That's why I'm moving to Latin America. It's all relaxed. It's all tomorrow. Whatever. It'll be fine. Just relax. Enjoy life. The Ancola. Anyway, Alphabet's other bets. So Alphabet's other bets would be all the little Alphabet companies besides Google. 262 million in revenue. That's like nothing.
That's their hobbies.
Yeah. But it is a jump. It was 150 million a year ago. Company's losses shrank from 1.2 billion to about 1.1 billion. So when I say revenue, I'm not talking profit because they lost money. So basically, these are not revenue generating projects.
I thought their Alphabet's operating loss. Oh, that's an operating loss, not a net loss. Sorry.
Okay. Oh, I don't know. I don't know this accounting stuff. Nest, you know.
Are they going to hold on? Okay, Stacey, let me stop right there. Nest isn't making any inroads, it would seem to me. Are they going to hold on to this? Are they going to kill it? Are they going to get rid of it like Motorola? What do you think?
That's a really good question. I think some of the technologies that Nest brought in, they're still investing in. If they're going to be like, yeah, let's make a lot more thermostats and a lot more cameras. I don't know if we should look for more new products out there. I don't know if they're going to sell it because they still have that $3.2 billion price tag. They've got to figure out how to recoup the investment on.
They haven't written that down yet?
No, it's not been written down.
Hmm.
I don't know. No, I would have noticed if they wrote that down.
Yeah.
So they're still holding out, I would think. But
sorry, I interrupted you, Leo. You were going through the list.
He's still puzzling out accounting.
This is so complicated at trying to. Here's revenue. Google is the blue, and if you look really closely, the other bets are the red. Okay.
Yes.
So the other bets include Access, Google Fiber, Calico. Is that their life extension thing, Calico?
No, Verily is life extension. Calico, isn't that the contact lens? Calico, hold on.
Nest, Google Ventures, Google Capital, and the X research and development stuff. So you could see other bets don't. Irrelevant to the overall
aging.
Equation.
Calico is aging.
Calico's aging.
Life extension.
And so, Verily might be the contact lens. Gosh, I might have it wrong.
Verily, thou hast it wrong.
Verily is life sciences. Okay, Verily is also.
Both of them.
All right.
Both of them.
Now I should remember. Who's doing the contact lens?
See, that's the problem is none of this stuff is productized, right? It's just.
Do they even mention the cars? Whatchamacallit?
Waymo?
Waymo's. Yeah, no. Verily was the contact lens, but it doesn't really exist.
It was just somebody's bright idea.
So there we go.
So that's the other bets. Let's look at Google earnings. There it is. Google and Novartis won't be testing the smart contact lens after all, says that story in Fortune magazine. Whatever happened to Fortune? After Stacy left, I stopped reading it. No. Actually, you know what? He's been writing some great stuff of late in Fortune, and his beat has broadened a lot. He's writing about life and politics and all sorts of stuff.
Well, he writes about media, and politics is a huge...
I guess it's a big part of media, isn't it? Yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to find the Google earnings. Broken out. Google earnings.
Hmm.
So
just the Google business.
This is way too broken out. I can't. This is like EPS cons surprise. They failed to meet expectations. It was a negative 31 cents per share. Revs, 26.04 billion in rev. Maybe I can get the details. Let's look at the details. This is why I can't invest money. Oh my gosh. Here's 3 months ending December 31st, 2016. That would be the current quarter. $26 billion in revenue. Increase in revenue year over year, 22%. Nice. Generally accepted accounting practices. Operating income, $6 billion. Operating margin, 25%. Now, Apple's, to contrast, operating margin is like 40%. But, you know, hardware, always a little bit more.
Okay, is that operating to operating?
Is it GAAP to non-GAAP? I don't know. You're asking me that? Are you asking me that?
Okay. No, I wasn't. I was asking if it was operating or net. So just revenue and net income. That's where you should just focus for.
Yes. Revenue and net income.
So not operating, just net income.
Right.
Because that'll take out all
operating
your...
will screw you up.
EBITDA.
EBITDA. So I don't know what the answer to your question. No idea.
Next time, I'm going to look ahead.
Would you please read the...
Yes.
You can, sounds like you can read a balance sheet.
I can. I took the Chartered Financial Analyst exam.
What? You did? Is for to be a better reporter?
Yes.
Good.
Google.
Effective tax rate. Okay. So I always look at that. I don't know why. Mainly because like I get jealous. Because like as normal people, our tax rate, you know, 30, 40, 50%. Apple's 26%. Google's 22%. They paid 22%. And you know why that is? Because they're offshoring all their profits.
So I did an interview on what might be the last episode of .NYC. That's another story.
What?
We ran out of our grant money, and so I got to figure out what to do. We'll have that discussion. I think we finally got our act together. And
I thought it was the first episode of something. It was your new Kickstarter program. Are you going to keep doing that?
No, this was the same thing. But so I interviewed the chief legal officer. I hope we can keep going, but I've got to raise money to do it.
Yeah. Grant. I remember that Grant had a limited
time. So I interviewed Mikhail Rosen, who's the chief legal officer of Kickstarter. And she is the one who did the conversion of Kickstarter to a public benefit corporation.
Good.
And really, really interesting. If you look up .NYC, you can see it yesterday. She's fascinating. It's just 25 minutes.
That sounds great. I'll watch.
But in a CPB, you know, you list the things that you're going to hold to, and one of them is that they'll pay their fair share of taxes, and they won't go through various tax shelters like this, and that's a way that they're warning their shareholders that we ain't going to minimize taxes and thus maximize profit through that direction. Interesting. Because the problem is, if you are a regular corporation and you have fiduciary responsibility to your shareholders, the reason I defend the Googles, Amazons, Facebooks, and Starbucks and such is that they do have to minimize their taxes to maximize their profit.
You can make an argument that maximizing your profit is not the only thing that you have a fiduciary duty to do for your shareholders. You can actually, there's some really interesting writings about this in business schools now in the last couple of years about what constitutes fiduciary duty. Because
I could well agree with you, but what happens when you have an activist shareholder coming after you?
Well, that's why this is so fascinating, is that that's becoming part of like the legal theory. So, you know, and you could get economists to say, yeah, you know, you should take into factor externalities like legal costs. Do you have a fiduciary duty as a big company not to pollute the river your workers all come in from, or the ground underneath where your workers live? I don't know. So, okay. Sorry. Total segue or total side thing. Go on, Jeff.
We call those hole. We used to have a rat hole jingle.
I was going to go.
Merlin Mann recorded a rat hole jingle for us. We did so many rat holes on Mac.
Did we have that?
No, it was on Mac Break Weekly.
Oh, it was Mac Break Weekly. Okay.
Rat hole. So what do we think? I mean, I looked at Facebook's results and it was like good, good, good. What do we think about
Google's gotten? I mean, the question is, how long does Facebook have before it hits the law of numbers?
Yeah.
It's growing like crazy. So, it may have a long way to go. I don't know.
Because Google's older, issue. It's kind of in a more mature environment, so it's not going to grow as fast.
Yeah. How can you grow at that rate forever? You cannot.
You will like this. Google's AMP is now twice as prevalent in Google News. So So if you want to be showing up in the Google News, you better amp.
You know, I'm going to be critical of amp here.
This is a point against amp, but go ahead. You know, this story.
Yes, exactly. For two reasons. Two reasons I have a problem. One is that you can't be kind of mau-mau'd into having amp because you're going to show up in Google. That's a conflict, and I agree with you, Leo, on that. And the second is they haven't solved the URL problem. When I get links from Nuzzle and places like that to an amp page, it's google.com/. That's supposed to be like, just a CDN. It's not supposed to be the domain, and they haven't fixed that. And that's a problem for media companies.
So to recapitulate for those who haven't been around for the AMP wars over the last year, AMP is a Google technology that they say is designed to speed up mobile web page loading by eliminating a lot of stuff, including ugly ad tech, most JavaScript. They cache a lot of content. And as a result, AMP pages pop right up on mobile. They're really, really fast. But you have to do it this. Yeah. Now, AMP, to be fair, an AMP page looks fine. You know, it doesn't require, you know, an AMP player. Publishers don't have to use AMP, or they can use AMP and it doesn't harm them with normal non-AMPed sites. But my fear always was that because it goes, it's kind of, Google says it's open, but really Google runs all the caches and does all, and is the one that approves all the JavaScript, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, with some input from other. We've had Richard Gingras, head of Google News, who's a big AMP proponent on the show, and we debated all this. But this is a scary point. In the last 3 days, Google has flipped a switch, and AMP content on January 26th, last Thursday, a week ago, was about 30% of the Google News results. Sunday, a few days later, 70%. So they flipped a switch and are now highly prioritizing AMP pages, which puts even more pressure on publishers to support the AMP standard. There are competing standards, right? Facebook has its – is that still around?
Oh, yeah. Instant Articles? Oh, absolutely.
Instant Articles, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think Google's goals are laudable, but I worry a little bit that it's a little bit of a grab of web standards by.
I don't think that was the goal. I think they're sincere when they say that they're defending open standards, but they've got to get there now.
Yeah. You could and as Bleak is pointing out in the chat room, you don't have to use Google's caching. You could cache it yourself. You can run your own AMP server if you want. But still, Google approves what JavaScript's allowed, et cetera, et cetera. And as made deals with advertisers like Outbrain and Taboola, as well as Google AdSense, to work with AMP. So
I think I sent you this back in November, but a friend of mine wrote this blog about, it's called GAMP. Google's AMP is a gilded cage.
Yes.
And he basically talked about how once he installed it, all his pages went to a certain place. And then now when he decided to uninstall it, he was hosed.
Right.
And
the link stopped working. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was kind of a challenge. I was like,
AMP
oh,
is
that
like
sucks.
Hotel California.
There you go.
You can check
or like
out.
AWS. You just
can't leave. Yeah. Well, anyway, so that's a bad data point. That's several bad data points. But the good news is I don't think AMP has really chewed up the world or anything. I mean, I see plenty of non-AMP pages all the time.
Well, that's the same argument that the telcos make about, you know, zero rating. Right. Hadn't chewed up the world yet.
Hey, by the way, data point, we debated last week, the new chairman of the FCC, Ajit Pai, and his long-term goals. Well, one of your predictions came true this week. Ajit Pai silently canceled the requirement that cable companies offer third-party set-top boxes.
Ta-da! I hate it when I'm right.
Actually, I'm going to give myself a little pat on the back. I think I also said that last week.
Oh, yes.
That's probably what this is going to mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
I hate it when you're right.
We're both right. We'll see what happens with net neutrality, but I think that's a very anti-consumer move, frankly. I think
yes,
consumers really would love to be able to run something besides the junky box the cable company rents.
Well,
you.
And the cool thing is it was basically going to turn your television screen into what is the internet, because it would let people run apps and search. Yes. And like, it was going to be
and innovate.
And companies, awesome.
And companies like Google and Apple and Roku were thrilled because
and Amazon, Microsoft.
They could sell you set top boxes. But the cable companies lobbied hard against this because they said, we'll try to balance this a little bit. They said, hey, that's our business, is what we present to our customer. Controlling what we present to our customer is how we make money. And you can't take that away from us.
So what's interesting there is it feels, and the parallels are not all exact, but Carter Phone and AT&T is kind of where it feels like for
Carter Phone was a famous, I think it was a Supreme Court, was it? No, maybe it wasn't.
It was? Carter Phone was Supreme Court, I
decision
believe.
Decision that allowed third-party equipment to be used on AT&T lines. AT&T wanted to require you to buy those old Western Electric hard rubber phones, and the Supreme Court ruled that AT&T's contention that it would be bad for service if we allowed untested third-party devices on our lines. The Supreme Court said nope and opened up for competition, and you could see what a difference that's made.
Let's see, the FCC made a decision. Did it go all the way to the courts?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, that was definitely a court case.
Do.
Oh, it was 40 years ago. What's the date?
2008.
Oh, okay. That's an old
2008.
Story. Okay.
You know, this is, this says, 48
years ago.
This is only saying it's, FCC decision.
Okay.
But
was it
Carter?
Really?
No, Carter took AT&T and General Telephone to federal court. In 1966, the Court of Appeals for Fifth Circuit agreed they would decide the suit, but the FCC at that point ruled, and I guess that means...
This just says it's a landmark regulatory decision. Yeah. That means the FCC made the decision.
Yep, that's right. Effectively making the court case irrelevant.
Ta-da! Okay.
Very nicely done.
Facts. Wikipedia. Yes. Okay.
For the win.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway, we're not going to see a Carter phone with cable companies.
No Carter phone for you. You do have Roku, and you know people are bypassing it anyway.
That's the bottom line. Is it's just one more nail in the coffin for the cable companies. They probably didn't see it that way, but it's just one more reason for people to cut the cord, get rid of that $7 a month or whatever it is rental fee, and that crappy box, and do their own thing.
And the cable guys know this is coming, but you know, like any good business, they're like, "Well, how long can we milk
this? Holding on.
What else? What else can we add to these fees that people pay?"
Hold them on as long as they can.
And I can't blame them for that.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I can blame the FCC for not ruling. You know, the FCC had approved this, but it was rolled back by Ajit Pai.
Sigh. is the Super Bowl?
The Super Bowl. It's this week.
Is it going to be? It's this week.
It's
Sunday. Is it going to be on cable or is it streamed or what's the deal there?
It's both. If you're a Verizon customer, you can watch it. Verizon has an exclusive with the NFL.
Bios?
No, on the phone. Verizon on your phone.
Like I want to watch the Super Bowl on my phone.
Or tablet. Yeah.
Well, you could
cast it then, to the screen.
Can you cast it from their apps?
I don't know. It depends on Verizon. I don't know. I don't have a Verizon. As one might know, I don't have a Verizon phone.
Yes.
I have a Verizon phone. I'm not watching the Super Bowl, but I am interested in the Puppy Bowl on Animal Planet. So that I would like also to have that be streamed. My daughter is Team Fluff, and I am Team Ruff for this year's Puppy Bowl.
So. You know what reminds me of the Puppy Bowl? The U.S. media. I was thinking about this in the shower.
The master of the segue.
I was thinking about this in the shower this morning. If you've ever watched five-year-olds play soccer, right?
Mm-hmm.
They just chase the ball. There's no strategy. It's just like a blob around the ball all the time. And I'm thinking that the U.S. media these days is like that. That all President Trump has to do is tweet.
Nearly as cute, though.
Yeah. They just have to tweet or whatever, and suddenly the story's over there. And they all run over there.
That's why.
So This is something I have thought about a lot, partially because I write about things that many people are not interested in.
You need to make more puppies.
Right. Well, that's I do think that.
The internet of puppies. There you got it.
The challenge for media is there are people who sound the alarm and say things and write stories, but if they don't get picked up by some ineffable, and I'm not talking about going viral, I'm just talking about...
You're right, because ultimately the news media covers everything.
Right. It's just, what do people notice at the time?
Yeah. But I'm thinking, I mean, I think that the predominantly, though, the networks and the cable news networks kind of drive the agenda, right? So what they're covering, it doesn't matter if, you know, some blog somewhere is covering it.
Well, that's my thought. I mean, it that's the tough thing. Like, okay, so here's a super techie example. I was writing about the peering debates in actually doing real reporting on that, like, about a year and a half before other people were.
Right.
And
it was too complicated for real people.
Oh, God, it was so complicated. Yeah. Every story was 1,000 words just to
explain it.
Yeah, I was like, oh, God. although after doing that, I could 30 minutes, I could churn out 1,000 words explaining theory, metaphors, go. And then tiny little bit of news on top. But that was a story that had legit interest and impact. Yes, it was complicated, but even things like broadband rural access or digital divide, that was a big story. And I had been writing about it forever. And then I think it was the Wall Street Journal picked up on it, and they had those kids unable to get their homework assignments. So they were working at McDonald's, which was a great lead that I did not have. Data caps were another one that I'm like, it's just not ready until it's ready. I don't know how else to say it.
Well, so the reason, I mean, of course, we're not gonna get political, but the reason I was thinking about it is I was thinking how with the nomination of Gorsuch, Neil Gorsuch as our Supreme Court, next Supreme Court justice to take Scalia's seat, all of us, like a bunch of five-year-olds, that's going to be the story for the next 6 months or 3 months or however long it takes. And meanwhile, Russian hacking, conflicts of interest, none of that is on the map anymore. And if one were a savvy media person, one could manipulate the media pretty effectively.
Yes, one could.
Because they're like five-year-olds playing soccer or
absolutely
puppies in the actually, puppies in the puppy bowl are not a good example because they don't even know about the ball. They're scratching their ears. They're looking around. Ball, what ball? You don't need a ball in the puppy bowl. You just put puppies in a cage or an arena.
So it comes back to our business model of chasing clicks. There was an op-ed this last week, though, that said that CNN should be broken off and it should go for not-for-profit. It's a journalist having a fear of profitability and capitalism, which I think is kind of ridiculous.
Well, there is a case to be made that since the Time Warner AT&T merger is up in front of government regulation and CNN is owned by Time Warner, that there might be some subtle pressure on CNN to toe the line until that merger is approved, right?
Though you know who is feuding with CNN.
Right. So right. That's the point. Is CNN better shape up or you're not going to get your merger?
Mm-hmm.
So there is a point to be made that for-profit media may have vulnerabilities that non-profit media doesn't. But what is non-profit? ProPublica, right? There isn't a lot.
Mother Jones is nonprofit.
You can't say public broadcasting is because they're being held ransom right now with the National Endowment for the Arts and the So,
yeah, all those who say in Europe, you know, you should have a BBC. I said, imagine a BBC under the present regime. No.
Right.
No, Voice now, of America is going to start playing.
So we need to, I guess what it is people need to support journalism. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Stacey.
No, I was going to say, I've talked to a couple journalists because they're friends of mine at various publications. And it's actually a little disturbing because there are some who say that their publishers are cracking down on their columns. There's a couple who've had headlines changed or stories rejiggered to be less antagonistic towards the current.
I see that happening.
And it, well, me too. It is happening.
Right.
And that's actually, I'm very curious because I've never actually worked in a very political area. And at GigaOM, our focus was, you know, the consumer comes first. That was always like how we wrote
That was our point. GigaOM.
I know.
what a mistake that was. No, it gets
at Fortune. I had one headline changed, but I could kind of understand where they were coming from. Yeah. So,
think that's O'Malik.
The consumer first.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
That's when you, and that's what you need. You need a leader, who says this is our value. These are our values. And these are the values we're going to adhere to regardless of clickbait. But you might do it at your peril from a business point of view. I don't know. Anyway, that's not political. That's media commentary. Okay. But file under media commentary. Let's take a break. And then we're going to talk about fun things like robots.
Robots.
Scary robots.
Robots.
I have a robot. I don't know. I don't think we want to talk about Android because we've got this great show the night before, every Tuesday night with Jason Howell and Florence Ion and Ron Richards called All About Android, and they really cover it pretty darn well. So I don't see anything really pressing. I do want to do, Stacey, and you can help us with this, more coverage of Echo and its ilk. Right? I have a really good new Echo skill that I'm going to share with you later.
Ooh, is it Starbucks?
Better than Starbucks.
Okay. Ooh. Is it a HIIT workout? Because I really want a high-intensity workout skill.
There are some very good ones on there. Haven't you found
them? Google Home has a new one, too, that's very nice. I like it. For us old people.
Stacey wants to work out for 7 minutes a day.
No, but I did the seven-minute workout. That's not exciting. Yeah. I want like a 25-minute HIIT workout. Okay, keep going.
Okay, well, we'll find one for you. The chat room, there's your assignment.
Please.
Please.
Ad read.
And God is unverified at Facebook.
Oh, the what? Amazon Echo is available in the UK chat room.
Oh, good news, but not all the skills.
Nah, I don't know about that. Yeah.
Our show today brought to you actually by a very cute little robot I met the other day. Named Curry. And Curry is just the cutest darn thing, about knee high. I really am starting to think that the whole premise behind Curry and how I understand Curry is that this will be your first robot. Like your kids 20 years from now will say, oh yeah, I remember when we got a robot. It was so cute. Curry is, kids love Curry. I've seen kids interact with Curry. Curry is just a couple of feet high. He or she, I don't know. I'm saying she because she looks like Rosie from the Jetsons a little bit.
I thought you said it was a he.
They say in the copy that it's a he, but then I asked him when I went down, and I said, I really feel like calling it a her. They say, well, you get to choose. Curry, though, and they did some really interesting things. In fact, they have a T-shirt. They have two T-shirts, one that says Curry does and one that says Curry doesn't, because they very consciously decided to not make Curry look humanoid exactly. You know, no limbs. It doesn't walk. It rolls around. It doesn't have a voice. Now, it can read to you and sing and make music, but it doesn't talk to you. It has distinct chirps for yes and no. It shakes its head. Its eyes follow you around. There's a wonderful idle mode where Curry will just just stand there while you're talking, and she'll just look at whoever's talking and then look at the nuts. It's so cute. Pretty soon, you feel like there's a person. This is a person. And it's so, I think this is the kid's first experience of Curry. Now, Curry does do some very useful things. For instance, you can have Curry come and wake you up in the morning, start playing your favorite newscast or podcast, have it start this week in Google, and then you could say, Curry, follow me. And then as you go about your morning routine, you go cook the bacon and eggs, go get on the treadmill, whatever, she'll follow you around and continue to read to you. She does not fall downstairs. She's smart enough not to do that. In fact, she's mapped the whole house, and you can name the kitchen, the living room. So you can say, Curry, go to the kitchen. Curry, go to the living room. See what the dog's doing. Curry has in her right eye there, she has a very good camera, which you pair with your phone so you can see what she's seeing. If there is a loud noise in the house, she'll go investigate and send you images. Hmm. She recognizes you, different people. She recognizes different sounds. You can always see the saved videos and photos Curry has taken, so you can see what happened earlier today. But I think part of it is just that she's really cute. And it's like, I'm telling you, your kids will say, yeah, we had our first robot, you know, and around about, 2017, I remember when we got her. Now, Curry's not out yet, but you can go to the Curry's website, HeyCurry, HeyKurri.com, and put down a refundable deposit for a pre-order if you want. No commitment, just $100 refundable deposit. Curry will be $5.99 remaining at time of shipment. That's excluding tax and shipping. And they think it'll be later this year, maybe September, October. I know Curry was at CES. Many of you saw Curry at CES. And I know that they say he, but you can call her she if you want. I after meeting Curry and spending some time with her, A, I fell in love. I mean, it's just... But B, I really think it's a girl. Maybe that's because I fell in love with her. I don't know.
Maybe you shouldn't anthropomorphize your robots.
Look at her. Her eyes blink. She looks around.
You pat her on the head and she looks up at you. And,
she does. She has a heart light.
Chirps.
Yep. She's a heart light that glows, can glow different colors. She's very surprisingly communicative, but I think it's interesting they decided not to make her too humanoid because that would be a little creepy, kind of.
Like the latest Boston Dynamics robot?
Yes, exactly. Now you know what I'm talking about. Now you know. If you want to know more and pre-order, go to HeyCurri.com, HeyKurri.com. Curry is from Mayfield Robotics, and they're really neat guys, really smart.
I want to know what your cats are going to do, guys, what my cat would do with that.
They've tested it with pets, and the pets seem to like it.
Or really?
Cart. Yeah, and you can actually, it's kind of, you can talk to your pet. So there's, it's interesting. I think the pet really... I'll tell you what, we just lost our dog, a couple of weeks ago. It's very sad. And the house seemed really kind of dead and quiet. And what was missing was that presence. And Curry's kind of like that. I mean, I know she doesn't replace Ozzy, but, well, except that she kind of in some ways does, because it's not like you're not alone. Like, there's a presence in the house. And she wanders around. She interacts with the house.
Does she follow you?
If you say so, yeah. But... she also can just patrol or wander or just wander. And she has a little charger. She'll walk up to the charger when she gets low and charge herself. It's kind of sweet. I don't know. And it's easier than a dog in some ways.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. and
no robot mess.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I didn't mean to bring up Ozzy. I'm sad now. But heykurri.com, HeyKurri.com. We have
really cool.
We're going to get one as soon as we can. We'll have one in the studio to wander around, which will be kind of funny. She can get over all the wires. I asked about the wires.
Can you get the camera?
Yeah.
Can you broadcast API into the camera?
Yeah.
You can broadcast Curry View.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
What is she going to do in the studio?
Whatever she wants.
Okay.
I don't know. We'll figure, you could maybe just be the Curry View.
The Curry View.
I don't know. Now, Curry's one thing she's not going to do is do this. I am scared to death of the new Boston Dynamics. So we've seen their dogs, the robotic dog that walks, and we've seen the... so this leaked out the other day. This is Boston Dynamics. This was at an investor's presentation, and somebody pulled out a camera phone and took pictures of it. There's the humanoid. And you could see these are kind of creepy, these walking. And there's a reason why the dogs and the humanoid shapes, because they can get over terrain that a wheeled vehicle can't. But at the presentation, they said, there's no reason we can't have robots with wheels. And they showed this.
Oh, my God. It is like the combination of that monstrosity plus wheels, and it's probably faster.
It's super fast.
Oh, God, that's so scary.
It can run lots faster than you can. Keep watching, because it can also jump over obstacles. And this is, by the way, this is autonomous. This is not remote controlled.
It's figure skating.
this is a company Google briefly owned. I think that they divested of it because of the defense contracts, and Google didn't want to. I can't remember the deal, but they did.
Because it's evil.
Because I think they realized that this probably wouldn't be a good thing for. Watch this. Look how fast this thing goes. This can whiz along, jump over things.
Wow.
Oh, this is your worst nightmare. Anyway, thank you to the investor who. I don't know what this slide means. Approach harmony, computer, robot, physical world. And it's double-headed lines between each. I don't know. It's making me nervous. They call it handle because it can handle things, you know, physically pick up things.
Big dog, that's the scary one.
Big dog's the scary one.
Oh, but Boston Dynamics is still a wholly owned subsidiary of Google.
Oh, I thought they were going to divest. Oh, good. I guess. Hey, we were speculating. We mentioned last week that Hugo Barra had left Xiaomi.
And we just missed the news.
We just missed where he's going. Shortly after we left the air, we found out he's joining Facebook as VP of VR. And there's a VR look at Hugo and Mark. That's not creepy at all. Sitting in the Facebook headquarters. So it was right after we got off the air. They announced that Hugo Barra, who everybody loved. He was that great demo guy for Android.
Yeah.
He's a great guy. And I think this is a smart move on Google's part to get somebody to be the face, not Palmer Luckey. To see face of Oculus.
Would you live on his island? Really, that's the question we should be asking ourselves.
I would not live on Palmer Luckey's island.
I would not either.
Hugo Barra's island, yes, I would. It'd be great. There'd be tapas.
So I keep on getting every single media company I talk to says the same thing. VR, isn't it just a... And I say, well, I don't know. Google and Facebook are investing a hell of a lot. And media people say, really?
Not just Google and Facebook. The NBA is going to do a VR, 360-degree... game of the week every week. You can watch it with your Google Cardboard, your Gear VR, or your Google Daydream. The next game is February 7th, Trailblazers at Mavericks.
So remember 3D?
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever happened to that? Yeah.
There was a lot of investment. I don't know if there was this much investment, but I don't think the market was as frothy either then. So, And it may be that we just haven't hit a tipping point and we're about to. So I'm not... But I got to say, VR to me still has yet to be compelling in a way that...
You know what? I am completely in agreement with you, Stacey. And I am equally, oppositely bullish about augmented reality.
Oh, there was some augmented reality news. What was it? Oh.
So VR, you're sealed into a visor and you can't see anything.
Right.
And I think there's some merit to, say, like a VR basketball game. There are going to be NFL highlights from the Super Bowl in virtual reality as well for Google Cardboard or Daydream. I think there's a lot to be said for that. A football game is a really good example. When you watch a football game, you're forced to watch whatever perspective or view the director gives you. But many's the time, that's one of the reasons I like to go to a football game in person, if I could only just get as close as the cameras do, because many's the time you'd like to see what the backfield's doing while the quarterback has the ball, or you know, how are they defending it? And you don't get the chance to because the director. So the ability to look around is great. So I think there's some uses for 360-degree video, maybe more so than virtual reality. Gamers like VR, I guess.
Yes. Snap is doing, the information is reporting that Snap is doing augmented reality on its kind of advancing its spectacles technology to add augmented reality, which I thought was kind of cool.
Oh, because I have the spectacles. So I could turn my existing spectacles?
I don't think you can turn your existing spectacles. I'm trying to get into the story, but, you know, I bought a subscription to The Information, and by golly, I have literally never been able to use it. I should probably email them.
Call Jessica. Because I use it. I bought it. I love it.
I love it, too. Yeah. I just work my way around it because... my subscription doesn't work, even though I've subscribed.
Well, you can read it on my
subscription. I'll read it on your screen now.
Actually, okay, so Karsten doesn't have my login, so he's only seeing the short version. Snap is working on smarter lenses. So this will replace the existing ones. They bought a company called C-Image that does augmented reality. So, and you know, they're going to go public within the next month. So they're going to have a lot of cash to lay out on something like this. And I would guess that given the threat that Instagram's starting to be, that they're going to want to step it up. In a way, augmented reality is nothing new to Snapchat. I mean, all of those faces and stuff, that's augmented reality, right?
Sure. Oh my God. You could put filters over people in real life. And what happened? Hangouts took all of that ability away.
Yeah. Stupid. Google. Stupid.
The youngs, they like that stuff.
I like that stuff. It's the funnest thing. Snap has already released ad products that incorporate scannable Snap-only QR codes. Snap to unlock ads let people scan a QR code, which unlocks hidden features like a lens or a video. Oh, that's kind of cool. This is some of the new stuff out of Snap Labs. I like Snapchat. I don't know if their monetization strategy is working as well as, say, Facebook's.
Right? Well, that's a pretty high bar.
Or even Instagram. I mean, Instagram, Facebook, you get an ad every 10th image.
Okay. I was going to say.
Snapchat, like the Discover page has become a garbage page, right? And so I wonder.
They're trying to fix it.
Yeah, I know. They're banning the kind of link baity, images. Because what happened is they changed it from just dots, which obviously wasn't a super engaging feature. So now the Discover tab is images. It's like a little magazine, like a Pinterest or something. But for a while, these images, and there's, okay, here's one. Is being a nudist good for your health? And there's a half-naked woman, right? So that's, and somebody had link bait where it was like a woman in a bikini and the story was about a guy. I mean, it's like, so I think that Snapchat has toned this down. Are you a Gigi or a Kendall? So, but I suppose this works with the youngins. But Meet America's...
Are you a Gigi or a Kindle could be a legit story.
Could be.
Or a legit quiz.
Or an excuse just to have more pictures of Gigi and Kendall. On the other hand, I think sending it as a messaging, but it's harder to monetize this stuff. I mean, one way they do it is with monetizing lenses, right? You have, World of... Here, let me do a World of Warcraft lens or something like that, right? So that's an ad. Let's see if they have any paid lenses here. I like the Easter Bunny one. That's good. You can't really see it. Sorry.
These are the sorts of things I do with my 10-year-old, and
it's fun.
But how do you monetize 10-year-olds?
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. I think that...
Club Penguin is shutting down, by the way.
What?
Oh, yeah, that's... Yes.
Yeah, that was like
the success story of the decade.
Disney.
When American Girl shut down, my daughter was beside herself.
Wait, American Girl shut down?
What?
No. They had a... I'm sorry. Look at Stacy. No. Don't worry, Stacy. Don't worry. It's okay.
Look at Stacy. What about me?
They had a special safe club for girls there. They had a social space.
Okay.
Yeah, and they shut it down. Show at the time.
Club Penguin was huge, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
But they're replacing it with something that's mobile.
Club Penguin's now becoming like a mobile app or something.
Did Disney buy it?
Disney bought Club Penguin, yes.
And so if they're shutting it down, it will be to replace it with, mobile makes sense, right? Why? Here's the problem, and it's a big problem. If you're if you're 13 or under, right? COPPA prevents companies from gathering information about you. And that's obviously who Club Penguin is aimed at.
But that was always an issue for them. That's an issue, Disney understands COPPA, however you say it.
Oh, yes. Really. So they're just discontinuing the virtual reality world.
The question to me is, if a child has a membership in this thing and feels associated with it, are they losing that?
Yeah.
Or does it carry over into this new thing? It
says, waddle on. We've decided to discontinue the current Club Penguin game on desktop and mobile on March 29th.
See, that's when you start a community, you have some obligation to that community.
Yeah, tell
Especially
Google
kids,
that.
Especially kids.
Okay, but
I know. I agree.
15-year-olds who were excited 5 years ago when the Club Penguin was happening, they're probably not checking it. So,
yeah. Yes, I mean, that's true, but
and is there they got bigger problems.
But but you're right, because it says here, Club Penguin Island coming to mobile March 2017. So you could just go mobile with it, I guess.
But, you know, how many kids? I mean, my child is in fifth grade, so she's 10. She doesn't have a smartphone.
Right.
She might get one next year. It's unclear.
Right.
I don't think so. Like,
that's a really good point, Stacey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and she can only have my phone on certain occasions, not in there. They're few and far between.
And somebody in the chat room says, Bleak says, why would they close Club Penguin before opening the alternative? Wouldn't you want to kind of run them simultaneously for a little bit, transfer people over?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, create a transition for them.
Yeah. Hmm. As of today, God's page has been unverified by Facebook.
I had trouble understanding this one a little bit. I put it up there.
They verified God?
It was too good a headline.
Apparently, God was taking sides in the Trump.
Wouldn't you think God would do that?
Trump Muslim debate. God had an opinion.
If God didn't stop Hitler, he's not going to stop Trump.
Oh man,
true. But God can at least complain, can he or she?
I'm not even going here.
So you can order. So now I can order Starbucks from my Echo. Is that right?
Yes. Sorry.
How does that work?
You have to have the Starbucks app, and then you basically tell the Echo. You say, "Hey Echo, order me a venti grande, whatever flavor or size rather," and it will actually handle things like a, I don't know, half calf soy latte, you know, with macchiato, or I'm trying to think of the most obnoxious Starbucks orders, but I don't order them, so I don't know. Anyway, the point is Starbucks was having an issue because everybody was using its mobile app, which was good, except they would go to Starbucks and they'd be like, they'd put their order in and then they'd wait at the counter to pick it up. And so it moved its line backlog all the way to the counter. Plus, they still had the people who were coming in line, and people were getting kind of pissy because they have to wait longer.
Excuse me, I've already ordered on my Echo.
I will say, so it's not common in Austin for people to really do this, but when I was in San Francisco, I was just like floored. I was like, nobody
looked in and like,
the line was super short. So I was like, sweet. You know, there was like one person. So I'm like, all right, I'm getting a coffee.
We'll be with you in half an hour.
Exactly. I ordered my coffee and then like 14 people came and walked in and picked up their coffees to pick up their coffees. And I was like,
you know what that's like, Stacey? You know what that's like? I can empathize with you because that's what happens in Chipotle.
You can
you
order
think
Chipotle
you're at the head of the line, and then they've got a list like that in front of you. That they got to make instead of you who's standing right there staring at the black beans.
Oh,
it's not fair.
That would be tough.
I still like the idea. So I can order it. I can get in the car, go get it, and be here all in one swell foop.
Or you can get a coffee pot.
All right. I'm going to give you another Echo. Sorry. Echo Skull. I should just name it computer, right? That would never set it off.
So that was my challenge to Kevin, but he didn't do it this week. So
to rename his Echo to a computer?
Yeah, because he was complaining like it would be terrible. So was it bad for you?
No, it's funny because it's in my office and I was doing the tech guy show. So I probably said the word a few times. No, I think you have to say it like more like intentionally. Computer. Okay. So what you need to do is go to your app, the Echo app, and enable a skill called Ditty, D-I-T-T-Y. Have you seen this?
Oh, I read about this. Yes. I don't want this, but keep going.
So you turn on Ditty and you say anything you want, and Ditty will turn it into a song. They have fast songs, slow songs, and football songs. here's an example. And by the way, after it makes a song, it says, okay, you want me to share that? And I said, yes. And they just put it right up on Twitter. So now I can tweet songs.
Oh, God help us.
So Leo's he's gone from hating it to actually actively making Twitter even worse.
Yeah, I'm polluting it.
Worse.
Well, don't you want to pollute the things you hate? So here's my, I did this for Lisa because it was her birthday on Sunday. Oh, you don't have my audio.
Thank goodness. Karsten, lose the plug.
Oh, too bad. You're not going to get to hear this fine song.
I want to hear the fine song.
Well, Karsten hasn't pushed the button.
Because I bribed him.
Karsten.
Karsten likes Jeff better than he likes me.
Wait, but what about me?
Huh? Yeah, because, yeah, Karsten. Oh, yeah, wait a minute. Let me turn it up here. There it is. Now you got my audio.
It's your fault.
It was my fault. Ready? Hold your ears. It did
and
that.
And you thought Twitter couldn't get worse. I await the moment when the president of the United States discovers this.
Oh, man. You know what? I want to create an alternate Diddy Trump or P. Diddy Trump. And I'll just
take any of his. Oh, can you take his existing tweet and make it into a song?
Yeah.
Can you just
take anything?
Do it.
You can do anything.
Go cut and paste. Cut and paste one of his tweets.
Oh, you don't have to cut and paste it. You do it verbally. Shall I start doing that? Make a new account? Diddy Trump?
Wait. Let's take.
I don't know if you can do something that long.
Tweet.
No, wait a minute. Oh, somebody has to bring. John, is John around? Bring me my my Echo. It's a. You have to unplug it. It's under the desk and all that's in the corner. And then we'll have to plug it in and it has to wake up. So it's going to be a while before we can do this. But
I got so just Nancy Pelosi and fake tears Chuck Schumer held a rally.
I love it. And then Mike didn't work. That's all I needed. I could probably do that much. So what you say, you know, ask Diddy or I can't remember what the trigger word is. Hello, Diddy. Make a song, Diddy, something. And then you say whatever you say next. Just say it. You don't sing it or anything. You just say it. It then turns into a song.
Or the failing New York Times has been wrong about me from the very beginning.
That would be a good one. That'd be a nice song. Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to. I'm having Curry get me my Echo. So
I thought that was cute. I was like, aha, we have found a use.
As soon as Curry gets back with my Echo, I will.
You're going to have to duct tape it to her head, though.
Yeah, she's not going to really be able to carry it. Researchers.
Go ahead.
No, please.
While you're on
skills,
I was going
to say, stick a tray in there that comes out, you know?
See, I said that, or, you know, and they said, no, you know, we really don't want to make it do anything too useful because.
Because a $700 robot shouldn't be too useful.
It shouldn't be too useful. It's just a companion robot. I want to see if I can get it on a plane with me.
You have to buy a seat?
No, it's my companion robot.
Oh, no. Oh, right. So what you do is you get one of those jackets for it. Say, no. This is my therapy robot.
Therapy robot.
Oh,
so while you're on skills, I have one on there for the Google Home, which is really kind of neat.
Oh, let's hear it.
Look it up. So you can tell the Google Home, I put my passport in the upper drawer, and then you can ask
it
Google
remember
Home,
it. My passport? Oh, that is a good
Isn't
skill.
That nice?
Jeff, it's like you listened in on the podcast this morning or you read CNET's story about it. But yes.
You guys mentioned it already.
We tried it. Yes.
And it works?
It works.
So I don't want to step on the Stacey on IoT podcast because that's a wonderful show, but I would like to do more Echo skills. I think that's kind of fun.
Oh, yeah. We can bring lots of Echo skills. I was thinking about doing an Echo podcast.
If you want to do an Echo podcast, do it here. Can you plug it in? We're gonna see what we can do here. We got my Echo. It takes a little while, as you know, to wake up and smell the roses.
Also, I put on there. There's new wooden and leather Google Home covers.
I did see that
leather. Why would you want leather? Okay, all right.
Well, I'm driving the car that'll be my daughter's car, and it has a plastic steering wheel. And I'm telling you, I understand now why you want a leather steering
wheel. Leather's nice. Ooh, wood looks kind of good. Look at that.
Wood is nice. Fancy.
So can I get that for my existing one?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a cover.
I have to say, I have a Google Home sitting right next to my Echo. I still use Echo more.
So what did I do the other day that I was like, holy cow, Google Home is so much better. Cause I talk to them on a regular basis. Okay. I'm not going to remember.
It's good. It's really good at, asking it questions of fact, the knowledge graph.
It was a search thing, but you can also have it play songs that are actually like, instead of saying the exact name of the song, you can say, hey, play, the theme song from that Kevin Bacon movie in the 80s, and it'll play you Footloose. So I haven't tried that. Actually, that may not work, but I have been equally general with it, and it's like, oh yeah, sure. So,
all right. Should I, let me try this here. Wait a minute.
Sorry. I can't find the answer to the question I heard.
Okay. So what should the tweet be? Jeff?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Hold on. Oh,
give me,
God,
give me no, a good one. Again. Should I do the one with the,
I got it. Where's the dude's one? I gotta find the dude's one. Oh, hey, here we go.
Go ahead.
No, that's not good. Okay, hold on. I got one.
Have it send in the feds.
Actually, this is an app you can also get on Google on your Android or App Store. And so now they've added a. That's pretty cool. An Echo command as well.
When did Mark Zuckerberg start wearing suits?
When he had to testify in Dallas, Texas?
Or when he meets Chinese?
Okay, yeah, because there's a couple pictures that aren't from him in Dallas wearing a suit. And I was suddenly like, what happened? God,
yeah. So,
the CEO summit in Lima, Peru. Oh, he wore a suit.
There you
go. Okay, sorry.
Okay. Hey, computer. Ask Diddy to make a fast song.
It doesn't look like you have enabled the Diddy skill. To enable, go to the skill store in the Alexa app and search for Diddy.
Do you have to enable it on every... I thought you could enable it on your account. Do you have to enable it on every device?
I know. I have all my skills on the account. But maybe, is this one on a different account?
I hope not. I certainly hope not. Let's see.
Did you tell it play Diddy or use Diddy to make a song or whatever its code words are?
Yeah, I did the right thing.
Phrase.
The phrase that pays. Yeah, skills are maybe somebody in my
maybe
home.
Maybe Lisa undid maybe, it.
Now I'm thinking somebody in my home disabled it. That's what I think happened. Oh, man. Yeah, okay. Hey, computer, ask Diddy to make a fast song.
What would you like me to sing?
What should I say?
The failing New York Times has been wrong about me from the very beginning.
The failing New York Times has been wrong about me from the very beginning.
Here you go.
You can't really understand it, huh?
No, you can't.
So
okay,
all songs in the public domain
would you like
are
to
just
save
doomed.
This Diddy? Share it.
Okay, I got another
one. Changes.
Make some changes. I'm gonna change the music.
I promise our administration will always have your back.
Sorry,
we will always
I didn't
be
catch
with you.
That. Make Try some saying edits. Things like replay this Diddy, change the song, change the message, save it, share it, or make a new Diddy. What would you like me to do?
Change the song.
Do you want a fast, slow, or a football song?
Football song. Let's try that.
Here you go.
I guess you have to really choose your words carefully.
Boy, you do.
Anyway, it's just a silly little skilly.
It is.
Oh, look at that.
Would
Comcast.
You want to save this ditty, share it, or make some changes?
Cancel. Sorry?
Can I help
so
you
Comcast.
With anything else?
Oh. No. No. Go away.
Alexa's so rude.
That was really polite. But Comcast is now, you can use your Roku as a cable box replacement, but you have to pay Comcast to do so. Ha, 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 ha.
Oh, I got to rent my Roku from Comcast.
That's only if you want to use it instead of your cable box, though.
Well, the FCC made them do cable cards, but that's interesting. Right. So I can tell them, well, I'm going to do that and see what happens. But
all
would
right.
Roku make a very good cable box? I don't think so.
So,
because I can't do DVR.
Look at this. This is my buddy. I bet it is because it's a Scoopy Scoop. Oh, it's not my buddy. Okay, never mind. It's Variety's reporting this.
Oh,
so
see, Variety knows.
Yeah, I was thinking it was my buddy Yonko, but it's not my buddy Yonko.
Hey, computer, ask Diddy to make a slow song.
What would you like me to sing?
Make America Great Again.
Here you go.
I take it back. This skill's terrible.
It's awful.
This is why I did not like the skill.
And by the way, that's not a slow song.
Would you like to save this ditty, share it, or make some changes?
Stop.
Thanks for using Diddy.
She sounds so sad.
She did. She sounded disappointment.
Yeah, she did. Sorry.
Okay.
So more details on the Roku box thing. Do they say how much they're going to charge? Or
they will get, hold on, net charge of $7.45 a month? Maybe?
Oh,
let's see. Hold on.
That's such a ripoff.
During the beta program, Xfinity TV users will not pay a fee to use the Roku app, but they will level additional outlet charges for connected Roku devices once the app is officially launched.
How do they
currently
justify that?
The operator's additional outlet service fees per set-top box are $9.95 per month. Customers using their own equipment, such as a TiVo, receive a $2.50 credit, resulting in a net $7.45
per month. That's what I pay for my TiVo, yeah.
So, a Comcast rep said the company is, quote, evaluating our additional outlet policies, unquote.
Now, here's the good news. The data that you use on the Roku does not count against your terabyte data cap.
Oh, yeah, that's such good news because they freaking need the data caps, right? No.
We're already screwing you, so we're not going to screw you twice is what they're saying.
Oh, I was going to say it's something awful. Okay. Hey, did you guys see that Americans are eating so much bacon that reserves are at a 50-year low?
Bacon reserves. Now, this is good news and bad news. I mean, of course, that's bad news, but the good news is we have bacon reserves.
Just like the maple syrup reserves.
Bacon reserves.
There are maple syrup reserves, too?
So the remember in Canada how the maple syrup reserves were pilfered a couple years ago? It was like the great maple syrup heist.
That's right.
So here's what we should
do.
A minute. We should start a breakfast ETF.
Wait a minute. So USA Today says, nation's bacon reserves hit a 50-year low as prices rise. And they've even got video of bacon.
On the list of problems facing the United States, a bacon shortage wasn't supposed to be one
of them. Dramatic
news. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the inventory for frozen pork.
Okay, New York Times says fake news.
Fake news.
Oh, I put this from Fortune, which I felt was sort of trustworthy.
I knew this is exactly the kind of story that always turns out to be wrong. Always.
Well, no, wait a minute.
Antennae should go up.
50-year reserves being low, commodities, as a former finance reporter, that felt like legit enough. I wasn't saying we were running out of bacon. I was just saying reserves hit a low.
I've gone to the newspaper of record for bacon, Ohio's Country Journal and the Ohio AgNet. And this comes straight from the Ohio Pork Council. So there, in the month of December, the total pork inventories totaled 41 million pounds. At the end of the month, it was down to 17.8 million pounds, a decrease of 35.6 million pounds year over year. Due to a supply and demand, analysts expect a continued rise in pork belly prices. Pork belly is what gives us bacon. So now you know when you hear about the commodities prices and all that. Pork bellies, that's bacon.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's also an orange juice and like lots of other exciting commodities. The world of commodities, so fun.
Which I've never understood.
The good news. This is from Rich Deaton, president of the Ohio Pork Council. While bacon may become more expensive for consumers, rest assured, the pork industry will not run out of supply. Ohio farmers will continue to work hard to ensure consumers receive the products they crave. For more information, there's a website.
BaconShortage.com? That looks like fake news then.
BaconShortage.com is blank.
It is.
It's blank. There is no BaconShortage.com.
That is really, there's so many questions here.
You think the Ohio's Country Journal and ag.net would pull our leg on the...
You know what? Let's just go look at pork belly prices. Hello.
Hello.
Chicago Mark.
The end of December's frozen pork belly inventory marked the lowest on record since 1957. Mm. Hello, America. Pork is going away. No more bacon for mom and dad for breakfast. Pork bellies at their lowest since 1957.
What have we been doing? Sending all our pork to Mexico? Is that the problem? We're going to bring the pork back from Mexico. We're going to make sure we have a wall at the border to keep the pork.
I don't want no more. I don't want no Mexican pork. Actually, you know what? The best pork is
Danish.
Korean black pork. But you don't know why. You don't want to know why it's black.
No, I don't.
Why? I do.
Huh?
I do.
Well, it's how they feed it.
Caviar.
Wait a minute. Now we're getting to the meat of the matter. Here it is. This is from pork.org.uk.
Why isn't the Chicago Mercantile Exchange? Why isn't their market online? Why can I not find this?
Actually, this is the UK Pig Meat Index.
There it is. Pork.
The UK Pig Meat Index shows a increase in pig prices. Cull sow prices flat, but wiener prices are going up. I don't know. I don't think that's what you think it is. Wiener, as in W-E-A-N-E-R. It's probably like, you know, wieners. I don't know what it is. That's enough of this. That's enough of the meat news. This week in meat.
Oh, Lord. Okay. Okay, so what else should we talk about? Do you have another advertiser we should get?
There's no hope. From advertisers. Did you read Nick Bilton's article in Vanity Fair about fake news is going to get even scarier than you ever dreamed?
Can you give me the TLDR?
TLDR, very simple. And it's something everybody knows. And Nick's writing for a more mainstream audience than he, you know, typically does. He's saying that new technologies like Adobe has a new audio program. There's the Digital Emily Project, a study in which researchers created digital actors. It could be used in lieu of real people. Adobe's program allows you to get voice samples and generate new voices. This is a face-to-face, real-time face capture and reenactment. It's, remember Clutch Cargo, where they would have, they would take a face and they'd cut out the lips and then they'd have the lips move on the face? This is Digital Clutch Cargo. Watch. This is... George W. Bush, and you see, watch his mouth and watch the mouth of the actor. Bush's mouth is completely reflecting the mouth of the actor almost imperceptibly. It doesn't look like it's cut out lips, right?
Well, if you look at it carefully,
this actor is captured.
This is this Bilton specializes in the if it could happen, I'll declare it's going to happen.
It's kind of like that. It's not something we got to worry about. But I think there is a point to be made, which is we're making really good progress at simulating video and audio and faking it. I mean, I think if you could be easily fooled by this reenactment. Watch,
we've had this on.
We've have?
Yeah, and Nick, they said, God bless him. Nick declared at the end of the civilized world when Robert Scoble came into an IO men's room with Google Glass on.
Yeah, no, Nick is a little bit of the, you know, techno panic.
This is the man who told us we weren't going to have pens in the future, right?
We're Nick? Not.
I'm still looking for pork bellies on the Merc. All I can find is lean hogs.
Rat hole.
Well, and one of the things he raises is that clip that went viral from the inauguration of President Trump looking back at his wife Melania, who flashes him a big smile, and then when he turns away, her face falls. And he points out, you know, it's not known whether that was real or not. It would be easy enough to fake it. I think it'd be easy enough to debunk it because obviously it must have come from pool.
Yeah, the source video. Yeah,
yeah. But he makes a good point. And since people, I think the real point is this technology exists. It's not hard to use. It maybe isn't perfect, and an expert could certainly detect it. But people who are willing and anxious to believe a story might find that sufficient to convince
them. I was so back in the day when I was at the New York Daily News, I remember wowing the editors, showing them how you could do something with this thing called Photoshop.
Well, no,
you trust anymore.
Yeah.
No, it's nothing new at all.
And experts, sorry, good news, experts generally can detect Photoshop forgeries, I think. Georgia Institute of Technology has analyzed 66 million tweets, and they now believe they can identify words and phrases that lend credibility to Twitter posts. All right.
I'm going to growl again.
Another growly one.
Yeah, I'm going to growl about this one again. It's stupid. So, you put in...
put in the word undeniable, and people can't deny it. Or eager and terrific. Again, highly credible. Words indicating positive sentiment but mocking the impracticality of the event, such as ha, grins, or joking, seen as less credible. So were hedge words, including certain level and suspects. You know, some people say...
like our
should
president
be like
says.
Way down at the bottom.
Yeah. Anyway, that's... I think you're right. I think that's another one, like Nick Bilton's story. I love Nick, but... yeah. It's not. It's nothing we didn't know.
Yeah.
Didn't know.
Did you read the story about all the Silicon Valley types who have hidey holes and are preparing for the end of the world?
How could we not? So you want some super fun stuff? I did some reporting on an article about home security for the ultra rich. And this story was reminiscent of that, except it had, I don't think I saw any mention of the big time fear that came up again and again with every professional high-end security company, which was EMPs.
Yes. Oh, so, we're dead meat if you get an EMP.
Yeah. So all of like the ultimate in home security and your bunker mentality is being prepared against an EMP. And I can actually give you the names of several companies that are able to do that for you.
So EMP, which is electromagnetic pulse, is a side effect of a nuclear explosion. It sends a pulse of high energy that doesn't harm humans, but breaks all electronics.
And apparently you can do it without a nuclear explosion too. So there's some EMP guns or
you do it with airburst, or you could do it with a certain, it takes a lot of energy though. That's why it's easier with a nuclear explosion.
You know, as long as you're chucking everything, might as well.
Yeah. Well, so like for instance, this survival condo project in the former Atlas missile silo north of Wichita, your 15 stories of underground condos would be impervious to EMP. I think it'd be sufficiently deep enough not to worry about EMP. You got other problems, because if you've got food, you've got stuff, you also better have some weapons, some trained troops protecting you.
in a motorcycle. I really thought that was awesome. In LASIK in a motorcycle.
The LASIK comes from Steve, and the motorcycles come from Steve Huffman, who is one of the founders, and a great guy. I really like Steve, one of the founders of Reddit. This is reasonable. It actually makes me think about doing LASIK. He says if the world ends, and not even if the world ends, but if we have trouble, getting contacts or glasses is going to be a huge pain in the butt. Without them, I'm screwed. I'm editing for content. So he got LASIK. He got surgery so he can see without his glasses.
You know, it's a compelling argument for that.
If you have diabetes, you're going to have a problem. If you have a heart arrhythmia, you're going to have a problem. If you can list lots of things.
He also says, I own a couple of motorcycles. I have a bunch of guns and ammo, food. I figure with that, I can hole up in my house for some amount of time. Is it weird? Because I've already thought through all of these scenarios in my head. Is that weird?
So I think about this all the time.
Okay, good.
Okay, but you're both weird.
No, I think I think maybe it's a function of reading too much science fiction and also feeling...
A common trope in science fiction.
Oh, yeah. Climate change and kind of the disparity between rich and poor, it doesn't feel like our society is on the verge of collapse exactly, but it does feel like I've very seriously thought, you know, Austin, Texas is not where I should live, you know, as the earth warms. I really should be living up north somewhere and probably gardening. But I always break down when it comes to guns. I really do.
Well, but that's the problem. And this is where I break down. The whole thing breaks down for me, which is if you do stockpile stuff and you have prepared some sort of safe haven, you have to have some massive security because people will try to get it. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have guns and barbed razor wire and dogs.
Uh-oh, Leo's going over the edge.
No, well, that's why I don't. It's like, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm going down with the ship. I'm going to be like the captain of the Titanic. I'm waving as we go down because I don't want to do all that. You have to be willing to defend it, as every good science fiction author will tell you. You can't just stockpile. You have to be willing to defend it. No, it's nutty. Did I do this story last week? I apologize if I did this last week. I did it on Twit on Sunday. I did it on...
So you didn't do it here.
I didn't do it here. I've been doing it all week. Somebody in the chat room said,
I've heard you
talk about this all week.
The deep end. Yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
Jeff is like, you guys, and again...
No, it's disaster mentality. It's typical of children of alcoholics, actually, which I'm not, but it's that... And I'm sure Stacey's not either, but it's like you think that preparing in your mind the worst is going to happen.
Okay, so what other positive news? Is there a positive story we can end on? Hey, how about the ACLU raising?
Yeah, the origins of totalitarianism is out of stock. Oh, you already mentioned that, Jeff. Yeah, Hannah Arendt's guide on how totalitarianism happens. The ACLU had a big weekend. $1 million from Lyft over 4 years. ACLU got enough money to join Y Combinator as a startup, which is weird.
I think this is...
I can't quite figure that out.
They raised $24 million, and they want to know how to scale the effectiveness of that lump of money.
So if you go to startup school, which Y Combinator is, you can get mentored.
And I think this is interesting, although I don't have a sense of how media savvy ACLU is. I do think there's a greater role for tech in kind of the democratic process. So we'll see. And how cool would it be? Actually, the ACLU was very active on Twitter when they were fighting the executive order on Saturday night.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
No, we've interviewed Ben Weisner, who's one of the guys at the ACLU. In fact, he's going to be on This Week in Law on Friday. He's a great guy. Carson's our roommate in college. And I think ACLU is quite savvy. Not media savvy in the sense that, you know, they know how to be telegenic and go on the talk shows. They're savvy in the sense of they know what court cases to fight, and they know how to get the word out that they're fighting them, which I think is exactly what you want. And the ACLU doesn't always fight for, you know, on the side of the angels. They fight on the side of the Constitution. So,
oh my gosh. Nuance. Oh, we can't handle that, Leo.
Well, I mean, they've defended, haven't they defended like Nazis and other neo-Nazis and something?
Yeah, the ACLU doesn't decide what's right. They decide what's legal.
They're protecting the First Amendment.
What's a right, a right. They're protecting the First Amendment, yeah. Well, they're doing what an AG should do, but I won't go there.
Hey, the Six Strikes Copyright Alert System is DOA.
Which we were all scared of. It was going to ruin entertainment. It was going to ruin life. And what killed it?
That's a good question. So this, the whole idea of this was, in other countries, there have been three strikes systems set up where if you are caught pirating content or accused of pirating, not even caught, accused of pirating content three times, you lose all internet access forever. Not just with your current ISP, but you're blocked forever. We didn't want to do that in the United States, so the entertainment industry made a deal with a kind of a voluntary deal with ISPs for a six strike system. Which, as you can see from the flow chart, is fairly complicated, and that's just one strike. But the idea is increasing penalties each time you get warned. It gets worse and worse. This is about 4 years old. It was responsible, according to Ars Technica, for sending millions of notices to customers. The problem, of course, is false positives, and there's no trial. You're just accused and guilty at the same time. But really, the real problem was it didn't have any teeth.
It didn't curtail infringement.
And it didn't work. Nobody was kicked off the internet. The first two strikes were for educational purposes. Upon a third and fourth notice, a subscriber was supposed to respond and acknowledge it. I did wrong. On the fifth and sixth notices, you might have your speeds throttled. And then the plan leaves it up to rights holders if they want to sue. But nobody in the content's going to sue anymore because that didn't, work so well for the music industry. So it just, the statement, after 4 years of extensive consumer education and engagement, the copyright alert system will conclude its work. The program demonstrated that real progress is possible. Not that it failed. It did exactly what it was supposed to do.
It educated people who were infringing.
Yeah.
No.
The MPAA said, they were a little more forthright, it didn't curtail infringement.
And it was a pain in the ass and probably expensive to figure out.
This is Stephen Fabrizio, Executive Vice President and General Counsel at the MPAA. These repeat infringers are the ones who drive ongoing and problematic peer-to-peer piracy. In fact, an estimated 981 movies and TV shows were downloaded in the U.S. last year using peer-to-peer. And the program was not set up to deal with the hardcore repeat infringer problem. In other words, they just figured out ways around it. Like using your Wi-Fi.
Oh, like my Wi-Fi.
Yeah, like coming over to Stacy's.
I'm wondering, because
I've gotten now from Comcast two notices about using more than a terabyte, but that's two notices stretched out over 5 months. So 500 gigabytes, then 1,400 gigabytes, then 500 gigabytes, then 1,200 gigabytes, then 500. So I don't understand why it's going up and down like that.
Do you have a backup? Automated backup that runs every 45 days?
No.
I'm just trying
Everything
to
I have is continuous. There's nothing that happens every month or every other month or anything like that. It's all continuous. And we haven't changed our viewing habits. I don't use BitTorrent. I can't figure it out.
So this is actually where the Eros fall down, which I think Eero is a sponsor of the show. So
I agree with you. I want to know what's using what.
What's using what? I used to have a router that would show me that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do. I did too. My Asus AC3200 would do that, but I retired it for mesh.
Mesh. Mm-hmm. Well, we should call good old Nick and be like, Nick, get on it.
Nick Bilton?
Scare everybody.
Nick Weaver.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
The CEO of
Eero.
Eero.
I bet you, I bet you they are. I wouldn't be surprised. But that's a more complicated thing to do. But they do at least know each device, right? So they could theoretically monitor the bandwidth of each device. I just don't know if they want to spend that horsepower software, to do that. Yeah.
Software right. development. All right.
All right. I think we should stop talking.
Because I A, have to go to the bathroom, and B, I am starving.
Oh.
Oh, is it TMI, Jeff?
Have you made anything in your... What? Oh, what kind? Have you made anything... That's usually... We're the crude ones, Stacey, not you. Have you made anything in your new oven?
Oh, yes. I had beef tenderloin the other night, and it was so good.
So you think it's really worth the $1,500 that you spent on that?
Okay, I am so sold on this. And you know what? It's not me that thinks it's worthwhile necessarily. It's the fact that my husband, who is a total normal person, thinks this is worthwhile. Because he basically, my husband, I love him, but the man loves his food cooked beyond all recognition.
He must be a native.
He's special. So when he's making anything, I'm just like, take it out now. And he's like, no, you'll get sick. You'll die.
He's afraid of trichinosis.
He's afraid of everything.
So do you like it rare?
Oh, my gosh. If it's like a piece of good meat, yes, it should be rare.
We should run off together, Stacey, because I'm the same way. And I'm surrounded by people who want it well done.
Well, so this is awesome. So you're just like, boom, I want it rare. You stick the temperature probe in.
Oh, then you can take your half out.
I take mine out.
Yeah. I do that on the grill.
Do you start eating or does yours get cold?
I put a little piece of foil. I tent the foil over it so it stays warm. It doesn't take that long.
I'm just concerned about you.
No, you actually want steak or whatever you're cooking to sit for a little bit after you take it out anyway.
Yes.
So what are you dying to make in it?
I think it recognizes and has recipes already for like 25, I think, pre-cooked foods, and I've made most of them.
Wow. We should, disclaimer, they are an advertiser on your other podcast.
Sorry, yes. They are an advertiser on my podcast, but I did buy the oven.
Yeah, she took the money they paid her for advertising and bought a June oven, which is kind of a net zero kind of.
It's not, yeah.
Given that I gave them $50,
just save the middleman and just say, pay me in ovens. I paid $50 for a deposit, but I can't bring myself to pay $1,500 for a toaster oven.
You know, if it's not a toaster oven, it's a full-scale oven. I've made chickens in that. I've made salmon. I make roast vegetables. You know what? I'm going to make a souffle because those are freaking complicated.
You can't make a souffle in there.
You know what this reminds me of? I'm old enough. Really? Leo and I are old enough.
I'll try it.
Leo and I are old enough to remember the introduction of the microwave oven. Right, Leo?
They called it a radar range.
Right.
Because it used radar to cook your food.
Radar. And there was the same exact discussion. Oh, nobody's going to use that. What a ridiculous thing. Who needs a baked potato in 4 minutes? Oh, my God. What is it going to do? This is really stupid. See, Stacey's ahead of us.
But no, this is an oven. This is a regular oven. The difference is...
It's a convection oven.
It's a convection oven.
It has ceramic heating elements, which means it preheats. It comes to like from 0 to 400 in just like 3 minutes.
Okay.
So
that's
going to
cut
fast.
A minute off
that's
my preheating. Not,
that's
time.
Handy right there okay. for the okay. pizza.
No, my big ovens take like.
Oh, yeah. But I have 15. A Breville convection toaster oven.
Oh, this is your Breville. So the presets are awesome. They're going to only get better. So, like, if something doesn't work, you're like, oh, this didn't work for me. And you tell it, and it's like, okay, well, so they've already done something with like the cookies. They realized that they had tuned their oven for slice and bake cookies, but people were putting homemade cookies in there and they were like, they come out burnt. And so they fixed it. You can make
it's
a
pizza.
It's
the intelligence, Leo. It's the intelligence. That's what's interesting about it.
It's so, I mean,
I can return it for 100 days. So maybe I will do it. Yeah.
So you've got till March. If you order it before like March 31st, you can return it before 100 days are up.
And who cooks more in your house, Leo?
I'm the cook.
And Stacey and yours?
So it's both. I'm the fancier cook. So you could actually make something and leave it in the fridge and then just be like, yo, Lisa, pop this in the oven at this time. And then you could have like dinner waiting when you get home.
Yeah.
Oh, it's early for you though. Never mind.
Yeah, that doesn't that doesn't sell me. The other problem is I have a lot of I in my past have spent a lot of money on stupid kitchen gadgets, and we're running out of counter space.
Well, you just got to get rid of sell the ones you don't like.
Yeah.
So,
What's the kitchen gadget that you most regretted buying in life? And Leo.
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me like the one I like, which is my Vitamix. But
I have a Vitamix too, and I'll stand by you on that one. That's an awesome thing. That's just a big ass blender, powerful blender.
Oh, it's the best blender.
There was an article in the New York Times about these new fast cookers, and it's like the same thing. People are like crazy about their fast cooker.
Oh, the Instapot! I have an Instapot. Sorry, I get very excited.
I will not buy an Instapot.
I love it.
Oh, why not, Leo?
I have a pressure cooker. I don't need another pressure cooker.
Oh, okay.
It's a pressure cooker that makes yogurt.
A food processor actually is probably my least exciting thing. And I don't own a KitchenAid mixer. Those fancy KitchenAid mixer
I have a KitchenAid mixer, and I used it yesterday to make macaroons. I use it. That's what I use more than anything. I can make pasta with it.
I hate baking. I'm not a baker.
Yeah. I'll tell you the gadget I wish I hadn't bought. I'm trying to get rid of. And we interviewed Jenny Jardin, and I'm a sucker. See, people tell me about this stuff. I go, oh, I got to get it. And she's talking about homemade tortillas. So I went on Amazon and I bought a tortilla press.
No.
Tortilla press. And I have in my pantry a 50-pound bag of corn that's been sitting there. How long ago was that interview? A year ago. And another bag of lime, because this doesn't seem like a good idea, but you use lime, you slake the corn somehow. And then the press, and I have never made tortillas. And so if anybody wants... I tried to palm it off the other day at one of our employees. She wouldn't have any of it. She says, yeah, I don't have much room in the kitchen. Thanks anyway. Bye. So.
Yeah. Tortilla press. George Foreman grills. Panini.
I have
presses.
A panini grill. I do have a panini grill. Bought that. Put that in the back. That's way in the back of the cupboard now, gathering dust. I got that for my son.
I have a bread maker.
No, I won't
do that. It
looks
like R2-D2. Yeah. And actually, I like it.
I'm afraid of bread makers because I would make bread.
And eat it. Delicious.
Slather it with butter and eat the whole damn loaf before anybody got home.
Well, yeah. But then you can make another one so easily.
That wasn't exactly what I was concerned about. Now I'm trying to find my June email. They sent me an email. Is it June.com?
I think it's June Oven, maybe?
JuneOven.com. All right. I'm going to just try to find that email because they said, hey, you never sent us the rest of the money. Hey. Yeah.
You want that oven?
You want that? Come on. You must want that oven, don't you? It's your turn. You can have it now.
I really like this. Even when it's not the presets, it fits with our life. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, here it is from Matt Van Horn. Exciting times, Matt writes. June ovens are now. Don't show that. That's got my token in it.
Oh, you know what? If you want to see it in action, there's a the village at Corte Madera.
Yes,
in
that's just
California.
Down the road a piece. Yes.
So you can actually go see it there. They've got a pop-up showroom. And you could probably, I bet they do demonstrations.
Are you a June oven pusher?
No, I'm just looking at it. You asked me about it. I didn't even bring it up.
June oven pusher. I swear.
She's a June ovenist.
I am a convert. I will be honest, but
it's interesting
I admit it.
How people get really they proselytize for their new thing, right?
You bet.
Yeah,
anything that makes my life easier, I will proselytize about. I mean, that yeah.
Oh,
I have the most.
I do have to buy it because apparently I put $100 down on it. I can't very well just leave that on the table. All right, I just bought the June oven.
I think, if you don't like it, you can send it back.
100 days to send it back. Well, I had to buy it because he showed my offer code on the screen, and I had to buy it before somebody else got to it. took my $100. All right.
Oh, man.
Does it work with Android?
I just bought something exciting.
What'd you get?
But it was only $100. I bought a Pine 64 board. It's a computer board, and I bought a Z-Wave module and a Wi-Fi module, and I'm going to download OpenHAB.
You are such a cool person.
Yeah.
I can't believe how cool you are.
I can't find the answer to the question I heard.
Shut up. Apparently, Alexa thought I was talking to her when I said you're such a cool person.
So
you're going to make your own OpenHAB device.
I'm going to make my own OpenHAB smart home hub.
OpenHAB the same? What level is OpenHAB at? It's an open source. It's not at the Z-Wave level. It's a lower level than that.
No, it's higher than that.
Higher than that.
So OpenHAB is a application layer. So you can use it to program your devices. Now, so I pledged on my podcast to try this out finally, because so many people were like, Stacy, you've got to try this. So I'm going to do it.
It's vendor neutral, but it does ride on Z-Wave, you said, right? You have to.
I had to buy a Z-Wave module to talk to any of my Z-Wave devices. If that makes sense, right?
Yep.
So it could
use Zigbee if you had Zigbee devices.
If I had a Zigbee module, yes.
Got it.
So that's the physical, like the literal computer.
Yeah. This is up at the application layer, not at the network layer. Yeah.
Yeah, and OpenHAB is on top of it.
Nice. It's an OS. I can't wait to hear about it.
Gonna be fun.
Why'd you choose that chip?
But the Pine 64?
Yeah.
Because they have a friendly Z-Wave module, and my friend Kai Krusner, who is the guy who does most of the OpenHAB stuff, promised that he had an SD card with all of the OpenHAB 2 flashed onto it, the Pine 64.
Ready to run. Okay.
So I'm like, boom, I want that.
Because you could use a Raspberry Pi. There are other devices you could use.
Yes, you could use a Pi, and this was like a way to make it slightly easier for someone like me.
Did you get your order in before Chinese New Year?
No.
You're not going to see it for a long time.
Not forever.
No, just a month. Cool. I want to hear all about it.
So yeah, when the time comes, you guys, I will show you my smart home.
We've given you a lot of picks. We probably shouldn't even bother doing picks of the week, but why not? Jeff, you've got a number, and then I'll let Stacy do her awesome
thing.
Let's see
what I do. All right. Relevant to the earlier discussion. 97% of voice apps are used for 1 week only.
That's ditto right there. 1 week.
Yep.
Yeah.
1 week.
Is that voice apps
fun?
Like,
yeah.
It's like talking to people or skills.
It's Echo and Google Home. So it's
home
skills. Yeah. And with that makes sense though. There are a few that I keep using. Actually, mostly I just use the built-in stuff. Come to think of it.
But you also have to remember it's hard enough when you have your phone, you have a little reminder that does that. Oh, I could use that. But to remember that, what did I do use home for last week?
You know what I do is last week Matthew Ingram mentioned 60 dB, which is kind of a radio.
I was on that.
Yeah, it's cool. Stacey on IoT was on it?
No, I was talking about a Jeet Pi when a friend of mine that I used to work with at GigaOm, Liz Gaines is a reporter for 60
dB. Oh, yeah. I was wondering if she moved over. I hear her voice all the time.
Yes.
So that's her new job. She's not a recoder anymore.
That is her new job. She
congratulations.
She
that's great.
Had a baby, did a fellowship, and then did this.
I love Liz. She's been on
which fellowship did she do?
That is a really hard question, and I can't answer it.
So this is an excellent Echo skill. Then you have to open that skill, and then you can say. Computer, actually, I turned her off. Computer, listen to 60 dB.
I can't find the answer.
And she'll have no idea what you're saying. We're on it. Some Twitbits are on it. They have short ones, they're, 5-10 minutes, and then they have longer shows. And you pick the categories, but then it picks just kind of an endless feed. And this was Matthew Ingram's pick last week, and I love it. And so I'm still using that skill. I like it. And it's kind of like it's just a mishmash of news and interesting stuff. And
short audio recordings is what she told me it was supposed to be.
It's almost all podcast from podcasts, but she occasionally will come on and do a story.
She and I did one. Yeah.
And you did one. Yeah. So they're adding their own content.
She interviewed me. So it was exciting.
Right. She'll do her own content. So they have get to know Neil Gorsuch. The Gorsuch announcement is seen from a reality TV producer. So I guess she's doing interviews for them, which is great. But then they have CBS News. Here's like a TwitBits. So I think this is great. I like this. Wake up and smell the coffee robot. Beyonce pregnant with twins. See, if I'd been listening, I would have known.
That's what I'm here for.
You're awesome.
Your big pop culture news.
What's your pick of the week, Stacey?
This is actually a podcast, and I feel like I've never talked about it, but I love it, and your audience is probably going to appreciate it if they don't already know about it, which I bet you guys do. This is, I always script the name of it, though. So it's the Flash Forward podcast, and this is, it comes out, it used to come out twice a month. Now I think it's once a month. It's well produced. They basically take a scenario from the near future and run with it. So it can be something like robotic farming. And they start every show with like, they immerse you in the future world, right? So you get this like, it's just like a NPR podcast, except it's not real.
So is it like Black Mirror?
Kind of, but not always as grim. Jeff, you would like the future of news. In December, they did one in the future news, and it started out with like President Jim Bannon was eating Thanksgiving dinner with his family in Marina Del Rey, California. And then the next was a different story. And it was like President Jim Bannon spent Thanksgiving in Iraq, and people were really upset. And they went through several of those, and you're like, oh my God, what's happening? Wow. And then she breaks in with the future of news, you know, is fake. And we won't know how to tell the difference. And then she brings in experts to talk about what this means. So it's really engaging show.
Great.
It's awesome. I love it.
Rose Eveleth.
And she is just amazing.
And no wonder it takes a month to do, because that's a lot of work.
It is. It is. It is a very well. It's not like the podcast we slap together, Leo.
It's not like the trash we crank out. This is actually produced.
So it's really good. I like it a lot.
Nice. It's you can find it at Flash Forward Podcast.
Have it on my screen.
.com. Flash Forward Podcast. .com.
Oh, someone asked if you allow promos for other podcasts. It never even occurred to me.
No, we don't. So I'm just going to edit this out, and you'll never hear it. Of course we do.
I was like, it's just good content.
Yeah, I don't care. Yeah, I'm not competitive. Well, I am competitive, but I'm going to plug.
So
I'll hold this against NYC you for again. Years, Jeff. Go yes. ahead.
So .NYC, we did the shows today.
Yeah, what happened?
Wednesday? I think we finally got this. I'm going to send you and Lisa a note about this. I think we finally figured out the structure of it. I do an interview show, and we do kind of a Shark Tanky show, but nice because we have no money. And so today, as I said earlier, I interviewed, yesterday. If you go to Facebook and look up .NYC show, you'll find it there. And so I interviewed, there she is, Michal Rosen, who's the chief legal officer of Kickstarter. And then we had three Kickstarter, products on. One is Dame Products, which makes vibrators. They were the first sex toy on Kickstarter. And really kind of interesting how it was done. And then there's a bicycle that puts all the gears in some place so it doesn't ever break and it's neat. And then we had a guy who made a clock that only goes for 1 year. And there are products that were successful on Kickstarter.
That's a good monetization strategy.
Isn't it?
We admit it. It's only going to work for a year.
No, I don't mean it only works for a year. It takes a year to go around.
Oh.
Sorry.
I thought, hey, that's great. Hey, here's your new June oven. Good news. You won't have it.
That's a good idea. You have only so many Kelvins in your oven, and then it goes away. It's gone.
Yeah. Don't worry about clutter. You won't have it in a year.
So anyway, our city grant has run out. And I think we finally, after many, many false tries, and boy, I learned, Leo and Lisa, how hard it is to do podcasts and figure out what it is. But I think we finally got there. So now we don't need money. So the question to the world is, I'm going to go and write some letters to some rich people in New York who are in technology who want to support this because it supports New York technology.
It's a great idea. I like it.
Should we do a Kickstarter campaign for the podcast?
Patreon.
Patreon, I agree. Do you use Patreon,
Stacey? I don't.
No. You just do ads. You have to choose. If you're going to do ads, you really shouldn't do Patreon.
Right. And I find I don't want to ask my audience for money. Yeah, I'm really bad at asking even advertisers for money.
Exactly. 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 Yeah. Yep. I don't want to become like, you know, public radio where every 15 minutes you're doing pledge drives. And
although I have a backlog of South by Southwest tote bags from years of going, so I could.
You could get a tote bag for every donation. Like, yeah.
Tote bag.
Tote bag. Get your tote bag.
You could also give away fezzes. I bet you have a few of those.
Yeah. Well, we give them to our hosts.
I know.
I'm taking fezzes from other podcasts.
I'm not giving it away to anybody.
Okay, good.
I don't have a fez.
Stacey, you deserve a fez. And yes, I don't know how we escaped fezzing you.
Well, because you weren't with us yet.
I think I was probably old.
This came out like, it was last Christmas, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But we'll get you. We'll get you. I think we might find a fez for you.
I'm okay with that effect.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
The truth comes out.
I didn't get a fez, but I don't want a fez. So thanks anyway.
No, you know what Stacey needs?
Oh, Lord.
Stacey needs some like twit artwork for those walls.
You don't like it when a sentence begins with that, do you? You know what Stacey needs?
I have art, Jeff. You just don't see it. It's
invisible art.
It's in front of me where I face. Bookshelf. Here, you want to see my favorite picture? You will like it.
Sure.
Wow, this is exciting.
It is. Yeah. A little window into Stacey's life.
It is kind of barren from the view. Keep mum, she's not so dumb. That's like a World War II propaganda poster.
I know, isn't it awesome?
Or World War I, maybe. And it's the idea is loose lips sink ships. Don't talk in front of the ladies. She's not as dumb as she looks.
I thought it was. I loved
that's
it.
Perfect.
And then I've got my Princess Leia resist art that's coming or that I'm printing.
You're a little feminist womb in that room.
Did you? Feminist womb?
It's a feminist womb. Actually, that should be your podcast art. I like that. That should be podcast art. Keep mum, she's not so dumb. That would be a great podcast album art.
I'll work on that. It's so related to the Internet of Things.
Well, we got to do a new podcast.
Oh, okay.
Stacey is smart.
Stacey knows things.
Stacey ruins everything.
Stacey knows best.
All right, it's time to say goodbye, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen. And we are working, by the way, you'll be relieved to know. We are working on the Punch Leo button.
Excellent.
I've tasked our crack engineering staff with figuring out how to do it.
Well, if they want, they should email me, and I'm happy to work with them because I do want that button.
That's an ultimate Internet of Things device.
Well, we get one for too, Kevin Toefel. Stacey can hit us both.
Yeah, no, we get one for me and Kevin. I think Kevin Toefel probably needs one too.
Kevin doesn't need. Kevin is perfect. Oh my,
you're not her favorite co-host. Leo, I'm sorry. I know it hurts.
Oh,
it's okay.
Kevin's been with me for years.
Yeah,
like,
it's fine.
Like almost a decade. Holy moly. Yeah. I have to send him more bourbon. All right.
You send him bourbon too?
Well, he's my co-host, man. He's okay. Leo's like, see, all you do is force me to spend money on ovens.
Stacey Higginbotham, Stacey on IoT.com and IoTpodcast.com at GigaStacey on the Twitter. Always a pleasure. Always. Darling. Wonderful. Also here with me, my good friend and comrade in arms, Mr. Resist, Jeff Jarvis from BuzzMachine.com, at Jeff Jarvis on Twitter. His books, of course, are Legion, including What Would Google Do?, Public Parts, Gutenberg the Geek, and Geeks Bearing Gifts. Did I get them all?
Always a pleasure, boss. Always a
Thank
pleasure.
Thank you. I have this way too much fun on this show. It's great to have you. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, I think, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. If you want to stop by and say hi, we'd love it. Yeah, but if you can't do it live, you can always do it after the fact. We have on-demand audio and video at twit.tv/twig. There's the website. You can also subscribe there or go to iTunes or your favorite podcatch Podcatcher app, and you'll find it there. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.